The first chapter of Vayera, chapter 18, engenders quite a bit of discussion as to what actually took place. The content of the chapter is that Hashem first appears to Avram in the plain of Mamre. It was far away from these cities, but Avram was there with his tent, and that's where Avram was stationed, basically to stop people who go by to offer them hospitality. And it says that it was a hot day. He was sitting outside. He saw like three people standing there, and he ran to greet them, bowed down to them, and asked them to come into the house. And it says that he himself actively participated. He was the only one baking bread and slaughtering an animal and giving them to eat. So they then asked him, where is Sarah? So he said, and they gave him the blessing that they'll come back the next year, and Sarah will be blessed with a child. So Sarah heard this. Her response was she didn't really believe it. Well, she believed it, but she was a little skeptical, perhaps. And then God said to Avram, why did Sarah question? Is this beyond the capacity of God to bring about such a miracle? It says Sarah denied, saying that she laughed. But then the people went towards Sodom, and God told Avram what he's going to do with the people of Sodom, that the punishment of Sodom should be great because of the strength and severity of the sins. And Avram began to intercede on their behalf, saying that if there would be people that were worthy of being saved, their schus, their merit should stand for them. And we know that it turned out that the only ones that were saved were Lot and his family. And when the angels came to Sodom to save Lot, so Lot offered them hospitality. We see that the relationship with Avram had that effect. And then it tells us that the people of the city sought to molest them. And Lot was able, with the help of the angels, to save himself and his wife and his daughters, and the wife we know turned into a pillar of salt. And looking back at the city, she wasn't worthy of seeing the destruction of the city, since she also bore some guilt. And that was the end of the incident of Sodom. At the end of chapter 19, it tells us there of the origins of the country of Ammon and Moab. Daughters thought that the entire country would be destroyed and they wouldn't have anybody to consort with in order to have children. So they went ahead and, in a seductive manner, they made their father intoxicated, and they bore seed from their father. And this was the beginnings of the origin of the country of Ammon, country of Moab. Now, a number of things that are worth noting and the great emphasis is placed upon. First, there is a basic discussion as to what kind of a revelation occurred at this point. It says God occurred to Avram and Elene Mamre. Why did he appear to Avram? For what purpose did he appear to Avram? And what does this signify? The three people that came, did Avram leave God and go to them? How does this all take place? There are many views on this. The very interesting view is the view of the Rambam, and he is questioned by the Ramban, but we'll get up to that, and we'll discuss this a little bit as our first topic. So the question is that Hashem appeared. Why did Hashem appear? Now, according to Rashi quote Medrash, that Hashem appeared for the purpose of Bikur Cholim. Literally, just to be Mekayim the mitzvah of, because Avram Avinu was recovering from the Bris Milah. And in fact, that's why some want to say, well, Avram ran on his own, but it seems Avram didn't have any help at all, except for Sarah cooking, baking the bread, because the other males who perhaps would go helping him hunting and so on were all still recovering from the Bris Milah. So they probably felt that they couldn't do it, but Avram himself did it. But God came to visit Avram. That's why he appeared to Avram. Now, why is it placed right next to the previous chapter? Because the last chapter of Lech Lecha was speaking about the Bris Milah. So therefore it continues that because of the Lech Lecha, which is the Bris Milah, God appeared to Avram. Others say that it wasn't really, it had to do with Bris Milah, but it wasn't as a purpose for the purpose of Bikur Cholim to visit him and visiting the sick, but actually God's revelation, reward for his observing the mitzvah. And Hirsch learns this way also. There's some earlier commentaries that say that, but Hirsch also says that the idea was that the revelation that Hashem gave to Avram was really in reward for the mitzvah. Why was it in reward for the mitzvah? Really, Hashem is every place. There is no place where Hashem is not. But the idea is a person can see or feel Hashem, or communicate with God, or feel close to God when he is a holy person. But the place itself, God is every place. We say, Molech Olaot Kvedis. He can't say that I can't become close to God because God is not here. God is everywhere. So really it depends on the individual. So according to Hirsch, Avram actually being in Elena Mamre, wherever he was, but Avram was worthy of this revelation at this point because he had just undergone the covenant, undertaken the covenant of God at his age, and dedicated himself to the service of God. So the atmosphere, the moment was very important. I mean, it was extreme greatness, and God revealed himself to Avram at that moment. Avram was able to attain Nevius and attain communication with God. Now, according to the Malbim, the Torah even explains the nature of this appearance. It says the following, that it occurred in Elena Mamre. Like we said, why was it Elena Mamre? Elena Mamre was far away from any altar that he had built to God. It wasn't in any temple. It occurred at the entrance of the tent, not in seclusion. It was among people. Avram didn't have to isolate himself in order to be able to communicate with God in communion as prophets do, but he was amongst people. It was the heat of the day when Avram really wasn't at ease. We know that a prophet has to have a serene atmosphere to be at ease with himself. When the music would play and the person would feel tranquil and so on, and he would be able then to meditate. But Avram being in the middle of the hot day and he was sweating and everything else, but the soul was so elevated after the Bris Milah that even under such circumstances, he was able to communicate with the Shekhinah, with Hashem. There are some commentators who compare this to Bilam. It says later by Bilam that Bilam, Hashem, only appeared to Bilam at night. And it says, no failing gnui naim, that when he would be overcome by this, by a prophecy, he would like fall down and not be able even to stand up, because Bilam was tameh, because he was uncircumcised and so on. But Avram, it says, no, that he was sitting kechom ayom in the middle of the day, and Hashem appeared to him. So according to these commentaries, the emphasis is on the greatness that Avram was able to achieve as a result of the covenant of the Bris Milah. He entered into a new sphere in the sense that he became that much, his neshama became that much elevated, that he was able to achieve this strong communication with God no matter wherever he found himself. Now, was it actually God? That's another question. Was it God or was it an angel that communicated? It says God appeared to him. Now, whenever it says God, does that necessarily mean God? There are some that say that it wasn't a visit or it wasn't a revelation, but really it was a prophetic vision. And this opens up a whole idea here. The idea, why did he have this vision of God? So the Akedah offers, one of the commentaries says, that God came along to give him courage, to bolster his spirits, because there he was in a weakened state. If he was in a weakened state, so he could fear that he might be attacked by strangers. So therefore, he couldn't protect himself, like we find later that his sons attacked and destroyed the city of Shechem after they were weakened by the circumcision. So he said like it was appearing to him and that Hashem was like standing on his side. So this was a revelation, it was a vision. So according to some, it was only in a vision. Others say that when it says God appeared to him, they want to say that it doesn't mean that God appeared to him and then he told God, stay here and I'm going to greet the angels. But it says God appeared to him, it starts out. The chapter starts out, Vayera Elav Hashem. And it doesn't say what God appeared to him. So the idea was, according to them, Hashem appeared to Avram for the purpose of what he was going to tell him later. But in the meantime, the Torah interrupted this with the story of the angels. But not that God came to strengthen him, to visit him, to exalt him. He came for a different reason. He came to tell him about Sodom. But as he came to tell him about Sodom, so then these three angels or whoever ran by, and that took place. But God was waiting to tell him the reason why he had come. Now, some want to go further, that, and some want to say that whenever it says here Hashem, it means actually angels. It wasn't even God appearing to him. It was angels. For example, we find by the burning bush, in that case it says, by Moshe, an angel of Hashem appeared to him, Malach Hashem, Belavas Osh, Esh, through the burning bush. And Hashem saw that he turned to look. But really it says the angel, and then it says Hashem saw. So really the angel who is fulfilling God's mission sometimes is called in the vision of Yerel of Hashem. So according to the Rashbam, everything that took place in this chapter had nothing to do with God. It says God appeared to him in the guise of angels. And then there were three angels, and each angel, as we know, had a different purpose and a different mission. So when Avram pleaded not to overturn Sodom, so it says, according to the Rashbam, that he pleaded with the angel not to overturn Sodom. This is the way the Rashbam says, which is a very novel interpretation. Now, there are some that bolster his theory by saying that we find in Tanakh a number of times where it uses the word God in scriptures, and it really means an angel. It says, for example, in Yecheskel, in the beginning, in Yecheskel, in the Merkava, it says there, the hand of God, Yad Hashem, was on me. And in reality, if you read over there, you see that it was speaking about an angel. So therefore, he says that the angel of Elikim, we find a number of times, and an angel can therefore be referred. Every appearance of prophecy, when it comes through as an angel, is referred to as the appearance of Hashem. So really what he did was he saw an angel, that the angels came, and that means since they came and he communicated with them in a prophetic way, as prophecy, they came to reveal it to him. So it means that since it was revealed to him what would happen as a prophet, so therefore the revelation came about through an angel, and he figures that we find a number of times in Tanakh to support this theory. The other thing, however, is the famous controversy with the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam says that all of this never really took place. The Rambam says it was only a vision that took place in the Meron Nevuchim. Now, let me read you a little bit what the Rambam says. He says, all of the events in this parsha were not physical manifestations, but only visions. And the vision begins with the words, Vayera Elov Hashem. So that means the vision begins that God appeared to him. How? That he had a vision of God. Afterwards, we have the details of the words of the angels and all the events that happened, but all of this was part of the vision. It's like you have a dream and you see all the little things taking part of the dream. And everything that's mentioned in this first chapter is really not, they're not talking to him. It's only a vision, which let's term it like a dream that he would be having. Now, appeared to him was not an actual event. It doesn't mean God appeared to him. It's just like the Rashbam. Rashbam says God appeared to him, meaning the angels of God. The Rambam says God appeared to him means the vision. Now, according to the Rambam, he quotes, the Ramban differs with him. The Ramban says, we never find another, he questions the whole idea of saying Vayera Elov Hashem, that should be as a prelude. In addition, he says, if the Rambam's view is correct, if Avram's encounter with the angels was only a prophetic vision, so why does the Torah tell us that Sarah kneaded cakes and Avram prepared the cattle? He says, what symbolism is there in these actions? Why was this inherent in a vision? Again, he says, we must assume that the angels did not actually appear to Lot. and Lot did not actually bake matzahs. It says in the Torah all of these things. He says, but since Lot was not a prophet, the Ramban says, how was he able to experience a prophetic vision? And if we conclude that Lot was a prophet, and therefore he had that vision, then who told the evil people of Sodom that visitors had come to Lot? Says, and again, if everything was but a vision, then the angels urging Lot to leave as soon as possible really never occurred. So how did he get out of there? It's all a vision. So the Ramban seems to take on in the Rambam that there are two different visions. One vision Avram would have, and then the other vision when they go, Lot has that vision. And he says, what do you need all the non-important points? And how were the people of Sodom? And how was Lot saved? He has many questions. Then he concludes and he says that the Rambam's interpretation contradicts the words of the Torah. And one is forbidden to hear or believe in them. This is the most difficult Rambam to understand, the Moreh Nevuchim's interpretation. This isn't his philosophical work. It's not in his halakhic work. But the Ramban attacks him, as we can see, quite vehemently. So some learn Vayera Lo Hashem to visit him to do this, but the Rambam says it's like an introduction to what's going to take place. The Rashbam says Vayera Lo Hashem means God appeared to him in the guise of three people, angels. Angels means God appeared as angels. That's the Rashbam. The Rambam is in the same way, that God appeared not as angels, but in a vision. But if we're going to say already in a vision, so the Ramban assumes that the vision is a middle way. Whatever relates to Avram was Avram's vision. Whatever relates to Lot was Lot's vision. So who made Lot a prophet to have a vision? It says, and even if Lot had a vision, how did the people of Sodom know? Where are they prophets to have a vision? What importance is there within Avram's vision to bring about the bread and the meat and all that? What significance is that? So therefore he says that the Rambam's pshat is, this is a famous debate that they had on this point, is very far out, and it's impossible, he says, to relate it to the scriptures itself, and therefore it's not acceptable. But the Abarbanel really answers the Rambam. He says the following, just to take a few excerpts. To the descriptions of Sarah baking and Avram going to get cattle, he says, these were also part of the prophetic vision, for such visions often reflect reality. Avram saw in his vision the way and he and Sarah would normally greet their guests. He says similar cases of this can be found throughout Tanakh. Now on this one point it's so true, first of all, because like I always bring as the example with Yirmiyah, a lot of times when a prophet has to be able to determine what the prophecy is, the prophecy may be in part of a normal vision, a normal dream. You'll have a house and a car and you'll have a grass and you'll have trees, and in the middle you'll have something telling you a prophecy. But it'll give you a whole vision of your house, but you have to have, and you have to be able to pick out the one point. So the fact that Avram and Sarah always did this, so this could be part of the picture in a vision. A vision means that there are a lot of things that are perhaps unimportant there, but they're just there for the scenery. Then he offers a second point, which sounds a little stronger. He says, the vision also explained the reason. In addition, he says, these examples illustrate the generosity of Avram and Sarah, because of which they were given a son. The vision tells us, what was the angel going to relate? The angel relate, they're going to have a son. Why were they blessed with a son? Because they were special people, that she would bake the bread and he would go ahead and kill the sheep. So the idea was because of their Afnos HaSorchin. So he says the vision also has a purpose. The vision, he says, was also explained the reason why Sodom was going to be overturned. The whole picture of them coming to Lot and so on, that could be part of the vision too. The vision was telling them, why is Sodom going to be destroyed? Because this scenario, just pick, would take place. They would come to visit Lot, and there the people of Sodom are so evil that they would knock on the door, and they would go ahead and demand these people. So therefore, that vision depicts a scenario why Sodom is so debunked, why Sodom is so degenerate and worthy of being destroyed. This is also part of a vision. And therefore, it's not just these have a purpose to it. That's it. Now, another point that the Abarbanel says, according to the Ramban, you don't have to say that Lot had anything. All of this that appeared with Lot was actually shown to Avram Avinu. It was Avram Avinu who saw all of these things happening to Lot. And it only comes to illustrate Lot's generosity, again, to Avram, and why Lot would be saved from Sodom. It included the behavior of the people of Sodom. Avram saw this, and the actions of the angels, just as what is going to take place. Why will Sodom be destroyed? Why will Lot be saved? All of this was shown to Avram. Now, so the purpose of the parsha was for two things then. To tell Avram, if it all occurred to Avram, then it was to tell him he's going to have a son, and to tell him that Lot is going to be destroyed, his nephew would be saved, and Lot's wife would perish, right? And then this vision became reality. Well, how did it become reality? That Hashem inspired Lot to flee, that Lot ran away, but not that the angels actually grabbed Lot to run away. This is the way the Abarbanel, he says he doesn't agree with the Rambam, but this is the way he interprets the Rambam. And there are two verses in the Torah he quotes, where it says in chapter 19, verse 28, it says there, he looked upon the face of Sodom and Amorah. If you just look at that verse, in chapter 19, verse 28, he looked upon the face of the whole of Sodom and Amorah, upon the face of the whole plain of the land, and he saw a pillar of smoke ascending as the smoke of a furnace. So he said this was the end of the prophecy. And then the next verse, 29, says, and it came to pass when God destroys the cities of the plain that Hashem remembered Avram, and he sent Lot out from the overturning. This is the reality. So according to the Abarbanel, the whole first part through 28 is the vision. That is the vision that occurred to Avram. The reality was that Lot was saved by Hashem. This is a very interesting idea of the Rambam. With the Abarbanel, it makes sense because it answers all of the supposed questions that the Ramban brings against the Rambam. But now, getting back to this point, they say it's a point of honor to Avram. I just want to quote, we emphasized Hirsch before, I want to quote it again. He says, whether one prefers either interpretation, the fact remains that God revealed himself to Avram while he was engaged in active work of hospitality, or that Avram proceeded to such activity at the moment when God revealed himself. Either God revealed himself, you know, that as Avram was involved, or first God revealed himself, and then Avram left for the hospitality. He says, either way, this fact is of extraordinary import regarding the true nature of Jewish prophecy. How greatly, he says, one is inclined to make prophecy to the category of exuberance, exaggerated enthusiasm, ecstasies, clairvoyance. He says, no. Ecstasy just becomes a preliminary to prophecy, according to them, and prophecy is a higher stage of ecstasy. He says the idea of his hisbeididus we find in Jewish philosophic writings, the abstraction in space and mind, isolation of man and thought, it could lead to prophecy and to the revelation. But he says there's a wide gulf between this type of hisbeididus, this type of ecstasy, and true prophecy. It is not abstract contemplation, but an active life that attains proximity to God. It's not the product of an imagination or of a normal condition. The idea was to the healthy, active, cheerful, wide awake life. So he emphasizes this point that it was in the middle of the day and Avram was involved in Orchim and in Eleni Mamre, not in the temple and so on. Yet the idea of the prophecy came about. Now, why did God appear? He says another point. Why did God appear here? the purpose of the revelation, what he wanted to do here. Avram was sitting in front of the tent. So Hashem was going to tell him that he's going to destroy Sodom and Amorah. Says the man who was sitting in the burning sun in front of the door to look for wanderers, and he's begging them to let him show them hospitality, says that man does not need to be warned for himself by the terrible fate of Sodom and Amorah, because he is very generous. He says the frame of minds of the inhabitants of Sodom and Amorah, that he's not concerned with, he says, but in the future, that none of his descendants in that same luxurious land should grow to the same frame of mind, but that the Abrahamic frame of mind should remain the inheritance of his descendants in the future, that luxury and plenty do not bury and destroy the benevolence of the spirit of Avram. That's what God wanted to show him at this point. He says that the people of Avram should forever remain in contrast to the principles of Sodom. So that's perhaps what it says a little bit later, that God says, am I then going to hide from Avram what I'm going to do to Sodom? And Avram will go ahead and to be a great nation. And all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Sentence 19, because I know in order that he should tell his children afterwards that they should do tzedakah and mishpat. L'man hovi al Avram es asher diber alof. So there are two ways that you could learn verse 19, 17 through 19. The way Hirsch seems to imply here, this is a lesson that Avram should be taught and revealed, the reason why the destruction of Sodom and Amorah is taking place. Well, it can't take place, but Avram may not know in a prophetic vision why is it taking place. Why was Sodom and Amorah destroyed? Really, what was the reason? The prophet seems to emphasize that Sodom and Amorah was destroyed because they didn't give food to anybody, because they were sorayim ba'orchim, in a sense, because they were lacking hospitality. You could, if you just hear the story of Sodom and Amorah, you'll say the reason they were destroyed was because they were immoral. They practiced homosexuality, they killed innocent people. Now, if we, as religious Jews, if you just view it, if we were told that, but we saw that Sodom and Amorah was destroyed, and we were told there was a hand of God, it was Midah Keneged Midah, and we wouldn't be afraid to venture our opinions, what would we say? Probably our first reaction would say they were bad people, they didn't keep the Noahite laws, they practiced immorality, and so on and so on. But really, it has nothing to do with being kind to a poor man. Just because they didn't give the poor person a piece of bread, they're going to be destroyed. Not realizing that the world only relates to chesed, elam chesed yibonet. So I'm sure if we took a poll, most of us would attribute the destruction of Sodom and Amorah nothing to do with Stockholm Mishpah. It has to do that they're not frumma people, they're not religious people in their relationship to God. Yet, it seems that the reason we know from the many midrashim, the reason why they were destroyed, is because of the hachnasas sochim. If somebody would treat someone and offer any kind of hospitality, the person would endanger his life. That was the concept of Sodom. So now if we say that, we could appreciate why this is necessary. God said, Avram, I know, will have children. And I want the future generations to know that Avram is going to sit and do chesed, even when he's sick, with the wayfarers. For him, there's no concern. But how will his future generations know how important the act of chesed is? So he says, you could learn, ki yadati leman asher yitzave es bonov, in order that the future generations will realize, in sentence 19, that they will keep the way of God to do benevolence. And that will bring the blessing. So this, we could appreciate the importance of the revelation to Avram for that purpose. And that's a lesson for all of us, because I'm sure that our first, or I know my probably would say, well, they're such terrible people. I wouldn't think that the reason was because, and when you look back at the Mabel too, what was the reason? Because of violence, right? Although they were immoral and everything else, yet the idea was chomos, because of the violence that actually brought about the final nail in the coffin. And the same here is Leman Hovi al Avram es Asher Diber Elot. Another reason you could say is for a different purpose, and I think I mentioned it Yom Kippur, I think Kol Nidre, when I was speaking, with the idea of the Bris of Avram. The Bris of Avram, the covenant with Avram, was unique. And it had to have Yitzchak, and not Ishmael. Ishmael is a Pharaoh Adam, he's only concerned for himself. Avram, if he accepts the covenant to be a priest of mankind, he has to be concerned for the whole world. That was the whole idea of Avram. In fact, Sarah, before she could have the child, had to undergo a change in name. Sarai became Sarah. And like the Targum says, Malkit Dishalti Bamamaya, the kings, the rulers of the world, will come from her. So the purpose is that Sarah had to have a child who would be able to fulfill this mission of God. And I interpreted that in last week's Sedra. It says there that when God first revealed himself to him, and he says, it was a chapter, he says, you'll have a child. And Avram said, no. He said, Lu Yishmael Yichye Lefanecha. Let Yishmael be the child. I mean, already blessed me with a child. I'm not going to trouble you to give me another one. Let Yishmael fulfill this purpose. So God said, no, you can't. Wife Sarai will no longer be called Sarai, which means my master. He's Sarah Shmo, for she is Sarah, Sarah, meaning Sarah, that it has to do, I'll call her Olam. What does it mean? It says in the whole world, I will bless her. Vehoisa legoyim, malche ami mimeno yio, kings of people shall come from her. That's what it says in 16, meaning leaders of mankind will come from Sarah, not on a personal point. So Avram said, how could this be? I'll have a child. And Sarah, 90 years delayed, will she have a child? So then Avram continued and he said, Lu Yishmael, let Yishmael, so Rashi says, live for you in your fear. Let him have the fear of God. Let there be a change in Yishmael. Maybe that's a lesser miracle. Let Yishmael have a change, and let Yishmael be the one suited to be the priest of mankind. So God answers him. It's interesting, the language. He says, Avol, but. You know, Avram like answered him, and he, but. I mean, there's nothing to discuss. But Sarah will have a son, and his name will be called Yitzchak. And this covenant, Yitzchak means sacrifice for the future. V'akimosi es brisi ito. And the covenant will go with Yitzchak, the son of Sarah, because it was Sarah who will give him the koach, the strength to perform his mission. Now, 20, he says, you're asking me Yishmael to live? Yes, let him live. He will have a blessing. And he will be, if you notice the language, v'herbesi oso b'mod me'od, I will make him very fruitful. Shnei moser nesim yoli, he will have 12 different princes, and he will be a great nation. Fine, himself, he will enjoy himself, he will be a great nation. But the one who will be the kings, like it says, to be the ruler or the leader, the spiritual leader of mankind, that has to come from Sarah. Now, this is what happened. Then Avram undertook this covenant, and now this takes place. So in a sense, I tried to describe it, that this is the first revelation which gave Avram his new mission as being concerned for the welfare of all of mankind. Was Avram going to petition on behalf of Sodom and Amorah? So really, that was the whole purpose of the revelation. The purpose of the revelation was that Avram, having undergone the Bris Milah and having now the Bris, the covenant, will begin to fulfill this covenant. And this covenant has to be given over to the future generations. God says, why am I doing this? I'm a chaseh mi Avram. Will I then keep undisclosed from Avram? Avram will be this great nation, the nivruchu bo kol goyei ha'oretz. All the nations of the land will be blessed by and through Avram. And I know him, that the purpose is that he should tell his children, la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat. Tzedakah u'mishpat. His children should perform tzedakah u'mishpat in order that God should bring about on Avram everything that he prophesied or everything that he said Avram would be. So in a sense, this was an example of an opportunity for this new bris and Avram to be able to bring up his children in this idea of responsibility towards others. So this could be a second reason why it was necessary to go through this whole vision to show to Avram Avinu at that time. This is another thought that we said. Now, the Stoko Mishpat, there's an interesting idea brought down from the Chofetz Chaim, I believe, that he says, what is the idea of Tzedakah Mishpat? Question is asked, if it's Tzedakah, Tzedakah Mishpat means judgment. Tzedakah means a righteous act, which in a sense is more than what. So how is it? Do you expect them to do tzedakah, which means to give more than necessary, or do you expect them to do mishpat, which is the judgment itself? So the Chofetz Chaim explains it in the following way. He says, in every relationship, there are two aspects to it. There's the way you have your relationship with someone else, the way you're the giver, and also the way you receive. You perceive what you receive. So there's two facets to every relationship. So he says, and they're both necessary. There is necessary for tzedakah and necessary for mishpat. He says the best way is the following, that mishpat, what you're taking or doing to your fellow man, you should be exactly right with mishpat, meaning don't take anything that doesn't belong to you. On the other hand, the tzedakah comes in what he's doing to you. That means that you should go a little bit more than lifni mishur sadin. Give him the benefit of the doubt. If there's a doubt in your mind, say, what he means, or does it belong to him, or does it belong to you? Mishpat means that at least you should, when you're dealing with him, always give him the benefit of the doubt, the judgment. You should do according to the judgment. But tzedakah means maybe he taka fooled you, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. You always go ahead in a tzedakah view and say that maybe he didn't mean this. And it's so true, because usually we work it away the other way around. When it comes to his what we're getting from him, we'll always stand to mishpat. And when it comes to his interpretation of what we're doing to him, we would like to interpret it in its tzedakah form. So in a sense, you should be more gracious in determining what he is doing, and more exact in determining what you owe him. These are the two aspects of tzedakah and mishpat that the Chofetz Chaim explains. Now, there are a number of interesting ideas that they mention. Here, for example, when Sora cries out, she cries out, she says, Achare below si. If you notice sentence 12, I mean, she laughs, or scoffs. Says, Vatitzchak Sora bikir. And Sora laughed within herself, saying, Achare below si. Below si means after I'm tired out. Hoiso li edno, I will have edno, meaning a rebirth or rejuvenation. Vadeini zokein, and my master is old. So the Brisker Rav says, really, Sora, the miracle that occurred to Sora, is Sora regained her youth. I will bless her. So Rashi quotes the idea of blessing her, that she received again, she returned physically back to her youth. And this was the miracle that occurred to Sarah. So the miracle wasn't the birth. There was no miracle at all of Sarah having a child. The miracle was that she became 50 years younger, 60 years younger. After she became younger, and then later, she obviously was able to conceive and have a child. So the miracle wasn't in an older woman having a child. It was a miracle in an older woman becoming younger. And then a younger woman having a child is natural. But by Avraham Avinu, what took place was he was an older person. And the fact that a person of his age was able to father a child, that was the miracle. So it comes out that there were two different miracles, he says. Avram remained old, and that's why in chapter 21, it says there that Sarah conceived, 21 verse 2. It reads that Vatar, Vateled Sarah, Avram Bain Liskunov, that Sarah conceived, and she gave birth to a son, to Avram in his age. And she repeats there again,
Ki yoladeti bein liskunov. I gave birth to a son to this older person. So it seems that she doesn't emphasize that she was old. She wasn't old, she was young. But the idea was that Avram remained old. So that was the miracle. So there are two different miracles that occurred for here. The miracle, acharei below sea, as it reads in chapter 18, verse 12, acharei below sea, hoisoli edno, after I was old, I had rebirth. In a sense, it wasn't the miracle of giving birth, but the miracle was that she became young again. And Adonizor Cain means that Avram remained old, and the miracle was that an old person was able to have the child. Now, an interesting Malbim that the Malbim speaks about, just have a few moments. The next instant when Avram came back to Avimelech, Melech Plishtim, and Sarah was taken again, says there that Avimelech took Sarah for his wife. And he was very angry why Avram fooled him when he was punished, right? So it says in chapter 20, verse 9, Avimelech called Avram and he said, What did you do to us? Why did we sin to you that you brought on myself and on my mamlachti chator gedola such a great sin? Things that never happened to us. So Avram answered him in sentence 11, because I said there is rak ein yiras elakim b'mokem hazeh v'raguni al dvar ishti, that there is no fear of God in this place, and therefore I will be killed because of my wife. So Rashi says, how did he know that there's no fear of God? Because it says when a poor person comes to the city, what do you first ask this person? Do you ask him about if he wants something to eat or something to drink? Or the first question you ask him, is that your wife? Who is this lady? So he says, obviously, since I came to this city, and that was the question, that was the first question, so I understood that there is no Yiras Elokim, that there is no fear of God. But on this point, the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says, you don't have to fear a person who is an officer or ruler, but the one that you have to fear are people that do not have any Yiras Shamayim. Because the Chazal tell us, the Medrash says in our Parsha, Yiras Shamayim is a great thing. For whoever has Yiras Shamayim can be free of sin. And whoever has no Yiras Shamayim is presumed not to refrain from committing any sin. So it says over here that when Avram came there, he knew that there was no Yiras Shamayim. And therefore, since he knew that there was no Yiras Shamayim, so he realized that if there is no Yiras Shamayim, there is no way that the person would stop and control himself and not go to commit a sin. Just to quote the Malbim's interpretation, he says, if you see a person or a nation who is a great philosopher, who is just in his ways and has accustomed himself to act properly based on his intellect, we still cannot trust that person. At a time of passion, he may act evilly rather than having his intellect dominate his passions. The fire of his passion may burn for a woman that he desires, for wealth of his fellow. He says, in such circumstances, even the intellect will lead him astray. There's only one force in man's soul which can guarantee that he will not sin, and that is the characteristics of Yira, which is planted in his soul, which comes down to one thing, Yiras Elokim. And then he goes on, he says, some wanted to say, the Chassam Sofer says, and the passage here, rak ein yiras elokim. I see there is only no fear of God. What is the word rak? Rak always means there's a lot, but there's just no fear of God. So the Chassam Sofer says it means the following. In Mitzrayim, when Avram came to Mitzrayim, Avram wasn't concerned in Pharaoh's regime, because in Egypt, he says, they were not ashamed to sin or do evil. They felt no need to have to kill Avram in order to take his wife. That's in Egypt. So Mele, in Avimelech's Gror, that was a state that was based on law. So nobody would take a woman as long as the husband was alive. That's the way the Chassam Sofer interprets. So secretively, what would they do? They would make the wife a widow, according to law, and nobody else would know. So there wasn't He says, Ki amarti, I saw Rak Ein Yiras Elokim. Like saying, Avimelech told him, why didn't you tell us? You know, we're a law of we're a country ruled by justice. We're a country with laws. You have nothing to fear. So he says, yes, that's true, that you're a civilized country. You're ruled by laws. But Rak Ein Yiras Elokim b'mokem hazeh. The problem is, however, with all your laws, you're still lacking Yiras Elokim. And once you're lacking Yiras Elokim, so you'll always find ways to fulfill your desires in that way without transgressing the law, literally. And that's why he was afraid. And this is a very important lesson because we know that what goes on in our world, to our great sorrow, you could be in very civilized cultured civilizations, but if there is no Yiras Elokim, people always find ways to be able to find and fulfill their wishes.
Truly Yishmael's position, that Yishmael was an Eved. Not only that, when they went to the Akedah, it says that he took Yitzchak and he took the, it says he took the youths with him. Who were the youths? So they say the youths were Eliezer, Eved Avram, and Yishmael. But they were both called the Nar, the youths. Why? Because really, but the status of Yishmael, honestly, was also the status of a son of a Shifra, and therefore he retained the status of a servant. Whereas the sons of Jacob from Klal Yisrael, the Shvatim, they were not considered servants because they were given their freedom when that became. So now it comes out that Yishmael is no longer the son of Avram in that sense. And that's why the Rambam says when it comes to circumcision that all the children of Abraham have that. It would refer only the way he says to the Bnei Keturah, but not necessarily to Yishmael, because Yishmael really could be an Eved. Now, Yishmael, when he was in his household, then he really went ahead and circumcised him. But afterwards, on the descendants of Yishmael. Now it doesn't matter because we really don't know who the Bnei Keturah are. Because after the time of Sancheriv, when he destroyed the entire unit, so we really don't know who remains the Bnei Keturah.